GM, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Evangelist Africa podcast. Today, we have a very interesting guest with us. His name is Jenga Jojo. Yo, Jenga, what's up? Welcome.
Thanks, Tech Decade. Hey, everyone. Nice to have you here.
And so our conversation today is going to be around decentralized governance. And we feel like Optimism DAO is doing quite the experiment. And so we are going to be using Optimism DAO as an example or as a case study for some of the things that we are going to be talking about. And so, yeah, strap in and let's have a great time. So Jenga, usually what we do is that we start with an intro, we start with a background story, and what I like to refer to as a canon event. So usually everyone in crypto has a time or an event that basically brings them into crypto and then make them stay here forever. So what is your story, sir?
Yeah, very, very good point, Tech Decade. I think that's how most people who are like part of crypto community stick around, because there is like a life-changing event. In my case, this was March 2020, markets went down, central banks started printing, and everyone was locked at home. So I was like, what is happening? And then that whole experience of being indoors while like the state controlling all this narrative, like, led me down through a path of asking myself, like, what is the role of the state and what is the role of the individual? And yeah, how is this enforced? And a few months later, I emerged on the other end, concluding that, okay, crypto is the future. And then from there on, I was pretty much all in.
Indeed, crypto is the future. And yeah, the question of self-sovereignty and how it relates to the state, it's a very interesting one. I read one of the books that that changed my perception for the good was The Sovereign Individual, right? A very, very interesting book that I highly suggest anyone to read. But yeah, definitely.
I agree with you, actually. Like, I think for me, I did a lot of research, but that book was also, the turning point in my understanding of the whole paradigm. So plus one, please do read that book.
Right. So now in the ever-evolving world of Web3, right, where decentralization is the beacon guiding us towards a new era of the internet, we find ourselves at the convergence of innovation, freedom, and community-driven development. So like I've already indicated, today we are delving into the heart of this revolution or revolutionary ecosystem to explore a concept that is reshaping our understanding of collective decision-making and organizational structure, and that is decentralized governance. Now, some people might even say that decentralized governance is the lifeblood of Web3, empowering communities with the tools to shape their destinies, fostering transparency, and distributing power. Very, very important. Distributing power away from centralized entities and allowing for a more equitable and inclusive digital realm. And it's the force that enables us to break the chains of traditional hierarchies and create a more open and collaborative digital world. Jenga, what is your thoughts? What will you refer to as decentralized governance?
Yeah, very good question. Maybe like a bit of context on this. So in my understanding of crypto, being building in DAOs for over 2 years, is that what we are trying to do as a whole industry is that we're trying to figure out coordination. And in doing so, we are speedrunning the history of coordination. Governance is a very important point when it comes to coordination, because that's how we decide what people will do. In the beginning, we started with a direct democracy when these systems were first deployed. Then we reached the limits of direct democracy, and now we are at the stage of delegated governance. In delegated governance, the legacy system works in such a way that you have your representatives that you vote for, and these representatives then go to the House or the Parliament, and then on behalf of you, they express their opinions, their votes, and work with the other delegates so that you, the voter, directly or indirectly benefits from this interaction. In Web3, we are more metaverse native than IRL native. So the delegates and the voting, as well as the Parliament and the House, as well as all the tokens, everything is purely digital. But that does not mean the system or the way it works is too different. Maybe it's different in the way that we don't use the traditional voting stations or voter ID cards and things like that. We use tokens and we delegate tokens to delegates. These delegates then go to different ecosystems around Web3, such as Optimism, such as DeFi protocols like Aave and Compound, or other places like ENS that produce revenue, and try to work with these communities in these so-called parliaments, if you want to call them, so that they can drive some revenue and some value back to the people that delegated to them. So at least this is the theory. The practice may have some nuances. And as I explained, we are speed running the history of coordination. So as we do this process, we are learning and we are evolving as we learn.
That's an awesome point. And you've touched on a lot of things like delegated governance, which we will talk about very soon. One of the things I want to add, or something that I want to add to what decentralized governance is to picture the Web3 space as two layers, right? You have the technology layer, and then you have the social layer. And the way we move forward, or one of the key ways that we drive innovation within the space, is decision making, or how we coordinate, like Jenga said, how we coordinate decision making, resource allocation, and everything else, right? And decentralization is one of the core tenets of the entire space. And so if you bring it to the social layer, that is where the decentralized governance especially comes in. And so at the social layer, it's all about one, yes, how do we make decisions? How do we relate with each other? How do we relate to other stakeholders within the ecosystem? And even how do we relate to the technology itself, right? In moving the entire innovation forward. So yeah, if you want to look at decentralized governance in that direction too, that's something. So the social layer, the interactions within the social layer of Web3 essentially can be said as decentralized governance, because decentralized governance covers so many things, right? Decision-making, interactions, so many things. So just something that I wanted to add there real quick. And so there has been, or there are a lot of experimentation happening with decentralized governance. One of the major ecosystems that is basically pushing this to the boundaries is Optimism DAO, right? Or the Optimism Collective. And so, Jenga, can you explain a little bit Optimism DAO governance, the fundamentals?
For sure. So for a bit of context, Optimism is a layer two built on top of Ethereum. It's a scaling solution that enables Ethereum to have more transactions processed at lower costs. So the Optimism DAO sits on top of this technology and is a way for humans to govern how this technology moves forward. In order for the DAO to govern itself, there are two houses that the DAO has. There is a token house and there is a citizen's house. Now, this is quite innovative because this is the one of the first DAOs, and I think still one of the only ones, at least the big ones, that have this bicameral structure. Structure comes as a result of many learnings that have happened in DAO governance in the past, where if all governance is the domain of token holders, then there is usually plutocracy as a result of it. And we as an ecosystem still haven't figured out how to guarantee one person, one vote. So in case of Optimism, what they did was to split the decision-making between two different bodies. The token holders make decisions on governance, such as where the holders will spend the DAO will spend its treasury, how the protocol will be upgraded, how the brand will work, and things like that. Whereas the citizens are responsible for allocating funds to public good projects in a retroactive way. Right now, the allocations are in the OP token based on the launch configuration of its tokenomics. However, in the near future, once the layer 2 starts generating fees in ETH, these fees will then be part of the retroactive public goods funding. But I hope I was able to give a brief overview.
Yes, absolutely. Although I feel like the governedness came in a little bit. And by the way, the term governed is a bit of a flex. And you know, it's for people who are really, really engaged in decentralized governance, have a lot of knowledge, and are at the frontier of the experimentation. So you mentioned plutocracy, right? So could you explain it like I'm five, what plutocracy is?
Yeah, for sure. Apologies for throwing governance language on people. So in legacy systems, right, like in traditional nation-state governance, the challenge we see is that although there are elected representatives that are governing, these elected representatives are incentivized by people with money. And this leads to many negative consequences, such as climate or lack of inclusion and so on and so forth. In crypto systems, we see a similar problem where the governance discourse is being dominated by people with most amount of tokens. And this form of governance where whoever has the most tokens is called plutocracy.
I see. So the more token you have, the more governance power you have. So what that means is that people with money or a lot of money are going to be basically capturing the system. Is that correct? And making all the decisions.
Exactly. And that's the similar to legacy systems. And that is one of the challenges we are trying to solve with legacy systems, because legacy system is the same exact way that work.
All right, so sounds good. Talking about the systems and who can capture the system, let's delve a little bit into how decision making works in Optimism DAO. And I think that some of these concepts that we explore, by the way, also applies to a lot of other DAOs. So Jenga, I think, can you give us a general overview of how decision making happens in a decentralized governance system? And then after that, we'll delve a little bit into how Optimism DAO does it.
For sure. So in a general setting, what we are looking for in terms of making decisions is A, how these decisions are made, and B, who makes these decisions. And if you can answer these two questions, then you have solved the problem of governance. In most DAOs or Web3 systems today, there is a method called soft consensus and hard consensus. what this means is that first, there is a proposal and people comment on it and people add their feedback, and then the proposal is redrafted. This happens maybe once or twice or more times, depending on how much people have objection for or against. But once there is a sufficient amount of people who have agreed to this proposal, then we say that we have soft consensus. Discourse is a popular platform where these discussions and voting around this happens. Once there is soft consensus, the next step is hard consensus. Now, it can either be an on-chain vote or an off-chain vote, but that is using on-chain data. So probably I use too many crypto terms here, but in simple words, if it's an off-chain vote, it means that the records that are there on the blockchain are used in the voting calculation. And if the vote is on-chain, then people are literally signing a transaction with their wallets and communicating it to the chain. And if, for example, the decision is around allocation of funds, then these on-chain votes send funds automatically. If the proposal passes, there needs to be no human interaction in the middle.
So let's get a little bit practical. So say a project makes a proposal to a DAO and it's on-chain voting. So that means that the DAO have like a treasury that is on-chain, and the decision mechanism is connected to the treasury. And once the vote is casted, or the voting period is done, based on the outcome, the treasury automatically releases the funds to the project Multisig. Is that correct? Is that like a...
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. All right. You did mention a couple of words, but before we get to that, I want you to give an example of some of the tools and platforms where this decision making happen, or some of the tools that are used for some of this decision making.
Definitely. So Discourse is a popular platform for soft consensus, where people comment and make a proposal that will be generally favorable for hard consensus. Hard consensus usually happens on Snapshot or Tally. And then there are some other tools that are more Web3 native, such as Joke Race. Now, Joke Race is a very interesting tool. It uses a Reddit-style decision mechanism where people can upvote or downvote suggestions to any proposal. Based on the upvotes and downvotes, there is a list created of priorities. And this, at least in my opinion, it feels like a more Web3 native way of decision making than some of the existing tools that are being used. However, there are more new tools coming as always. And yeah, it's a very interesting space for sure.
One of the major tools also uses Forum, right? And you know, talking about soft consensus and hard consensus, Jenga, what is soft consensus and what is hard consensus?
Yeah, good question. So consensus in this case is where most people agree with something. When it's soft, it means that there is agreement, but this agreement is not expressed on chain. So there are no funds that have moved. Hard consensus is when these agreements are expressed on chain and usually accompanies movement of funds, as well as the record that's created on the chain that some proposal was passed or failed.
So can we say that soft consensus are decisions that are not yet enforceable, and hard consensus are decisions that are enforceable?
Yeah, definitely.
Sounds good. All right. So just to throw in a little piece on the on the process on how decision making happens in decentralized organizations. So usually, again, there's a flow of sometimes how things work out, right? So usually there is Discord discussions around various things that the community wants to talk about. And then it moves to become like a proposal. So, you know, you start off with an idea. Hey, we think that this will be good for the community or the ecosystem, right? So it starts, there's a conversation, a general conversation. And then that conversation, based on the feedback on that conversation in the Discord, usually, it moves to a proposal. And this proposal will be posted on the forum. So a lot of, almost all of DAOs have a forum. Discourse is the leading. So proposal goes there. And then there's further deliberations and further discussions. So usually soft consensus happens on Discourse. And then after that, it moves to snapshot. So snapshot is where usually voting happens, off-chain voting happens. And then after that, it is enforced. So this is a little bit of the flow of decision-making from right from the grassroots, which is where the community is at in the Discord or other places like Telegram, and then moves on to like the former place where we talk governance, which is like the forum, which is Discourse. And then from there, it moves on to the voting platforms, which is Snapshot or Boardroom, like Jenga said. So this is a little bit of that. All right. So Jenga, as someone who has been doing governance for a while now, what would you say are some of the key challenges in the decentralized governance space?
Yeah, very good question. Don't know where to start. I would say the biggest challenge right now is one person, one vote. The other challenges are maybe like around tooling and getting people involved in governance, which is to say that governance is like a niche topic, and especially DAO governance, which is like a subset of crypto, a subset of DAOs and things like that. So like helping people understand all these concepts and then getting them involved in governance is also another major challenge. Yeah, I mean, finally, there is a challenge of new delegates or new participants joining any group or DAO to participate in governance. They usually start from zero and they have no say in anything that happens, even though this group or this individual has lots of reputation and governance experience in other places. So a way to port over reputation from other places into a new place so someone can get started quicker is another challenge. And then I would say the final challenge is how to make this sustainable for everyone. Irrespective of what the general external audience may believe, governance is work. All the people who are involved in governance in legacy systems, they all get paid for it. In crypto, it's still a new thing to be paid for governance. And if we want to make it sustainable, and if you actually want to have value for the DAOs as well as the participants, then having delegates or participants sufficiently compensated goes a long way.
Totally agree with you there. Incentives alignment is one of the biggest challenges that we have in crypto right now. And yeah, and it affects a lot of things that we do in the space, governance being one of it. So just noting down like some of the problems that you are talking about. So, you know, one person, one vote, key issue and key challenge now, which is the ideal state that we want crypto or decentralized governance to be, right? We want it to be one person, one vote instead of, like you mentioned earlier, plutocratic, where people with money who can buy the tokens have more, you know, power. So that's a challenge. Next one is the voter turnout. Not a lot of people with even the token are showing up to, you know, make decisions. The next one is general lack of like education, knowledge and information about the way these systems work. So like really, really interesting. The fourth one also being, you know, aligning incentives and values among diverse stakeholders. So that is also interesting. One thing that I also want to add is transparency and accountability. It's also like a major challenge. We've seen so many governance attacks from this angle because, you know, there weren't much transparency and accountability from people who were engaging in governance. So that's also very, very interesting. And the next one is also how to foster innovation and collaboration, right? We are like at the frontier of a lot of experimentations, and we are also, you know, creating novel ways to collaborate. And because of how open the space is, you have people from, you know, various parts of the world, from various backgrounds, from cultures, participating in this experimentation, right? Sometimes aligning, you know, all of these towards a particular direction is hell. And like you said, Jenga, coordination. So it's like, it's also another major issue. But I think one of the solutions that have come out of this whole experimentation, or as a result of these challenges, one of the solutions that have come out is delegated governance, right? So let's talk a little bit about delegated governance. Jenga, let's start off with who are delegates?
Yeah, good question. So delegates are individuals, or it can be groups of individuals that have been delegated voting power. These individuals or groups, they vote on proposals on behalf of the people that have delegated to them. They can vote on things such as treasury allocations, changing parameters, or upgrading the protocol, or integrating with partners and things like that. These individuals can also write their own proposals, gain consensus, and submit it to the DAO for final approval. And finally, these delegates also address the challenge of transparency and accountability by always communicating the rationale behind their votes and working in a public manner with the DAO and its participants.
That is really interesting. And so delegates are people who have given themselves up to say that, hey, we want to do decentralized governance despite all the challenges, right? So give us your voting power. I want to talk a little bit about DAO Steward. DAO Steward is a delegate in Optimism and other DAOs like Arbitrum. So could you give us a brief of what DAO Steward is as a delegate?
For sure. So DAO Stewards is the first DAO litical party, in my opinion, although some may have claimed that they have started others before. To give people a bit of context, in legacy systems, the representative that goes to the parliament is tied to a physical place. So maybe based on where you live, there is like an area that is defined, and all people living in that area elect one representative that goes into the house or parliament. In digital systems, in the metaverse, there is no physical space. However, there is digital space. There is mind space, as we want to call it, memes. Bankless is a meme, and people who are part of Bankless DAO are part of this mind space. So we, in the same way legacy systems can choose a representative, Bankless DAO can also choose a representative. And these representatives can go into different protocols and different DAOs that produce revenue. And this is interesting because in the same way the parliaments make decisions on where the state's revenue should be spent, the delegates in this case make decisions on where the revenue of these profitable protocols are spent. And then we as DAO stewards are the people who are active in governance, gaining reputation, understanding how the network works, networking with other delegates, all in attempts to A, improve the existing systems in our partner DAOs, and B, drive value back to Backlist DAO and the people that have delegated to us.
So what are the DAOs that you've been actively involved since you launched?
So we started with SafeDAO. If people have used Multisigs in crypto, they have probably heard of Gnosis Safe, and SafeDAO is the birth of that ecosystem. Then we are also active on Optimism, which is a layer two, Arbitrum, which is also a layer two. We have received tokens for CollabLand, which is a bot integration that happens in Discord. And we are active in VitaDAO, which is a DAO in the DeSci space that funds initiatives that help people live healthier lives for longer, also called as longevity in general. So yeah, we are active in these five protocols. And as we get more airdrops in the upcoming bull market, we will be active in more places.
So just a quick FYI, I'm also part of DAO Stewards. So yeah, that's it. Jenga, you mentioned DAO political parties. You didn't think I'll let you escape that word, right? Give it to me like I'm five. ELI 5, me. What's a political party?
ELI 5. Well, it's a political party for DAOs. I don't know how else I could say.
All right. So that's really interesting. There is a rise in delegated voting systems, and also the general conversation around enabling, delegation in DAO governance. And I think it's really interesting because we listed some of the key challenges that DAOs are going through right now. And so, Jenga, what would you say has been also some of the challenges that delegated voting is encountering now?
Yeah, so I would say the first challenge is the delegation by itself does not solve the problems of people not participating or in people without necessary experience or domain expertise participating. It is the incentive systems designed around delegated governance that solves it. Second is the participation rate of delegates. Even though someone may be a large delegate, the delegate, if they don't participate, the people who have delegated tokens are often not incentivized to shuffle their delegation. So someone with very large voting power can remain inactive in a DAO for a very long time. And this is a challenge with designing a system that is not completely thought through. However, in cases like Optimism, they are working with their airdrop strategy, their voting strategy, their delegate discovery strategy, and things like that, so that some of the challenges that I mentioned are solved.
Really interesting. In fact, Optimism has like a governance dashboard where they have, they have categorize the activeness of delegates, right? So there's one part that has ghost for delegates who have ghosted. So yeah, I think really, really interesting how the solution also has its own problem, right? Like one of the solutions to tackle lack of participation has it also has its own challenge, and it goes to demonstrate the level of experimentation that is happening, right? So there's so many things happening at various levels that I think that's very, very interesting. So the last question on delegates and delegated governance is, what is the general advice that you would give to delegates who, you know, people have entrusted them to be active in governance or decision making on their behalf? What advice would you give them to help them execute their work properly and in a way that's aligned with their delegators?
Yeah, there are a couple of things I would say. One is choose the places you want to be active based on your domain expertise. So there may be some DAOs that you have no context, you have no understanding of how the technical aspects of it work or how the treasury is doing allocations. Well, in some DAOs, maybe you are like the expert in whatever marketing or in public goods or any of these places. So choose like the DAOs wisely. Second is that the role of a delegate is not only to participate passively in governance, but the best ones, the ones that gain reputation and then subsequently are able to increase their voting weight and positively affect the DAO, are the ones who are very effective at sense making. What is sense making? It is the art of sensing what the DAO needs based on all the public information that is available about the DAO. So this can be in forums, in discourse, on their social media, in the team chats or whatever. So based on all this context, what is it that the DAO needs desperately to improve its situation? And then once you have identified that, make that into a proposal. And if your sense making is on point, that proposal will be taken like with a lot of enthusiasm by the community. And then finally, I would say being a delegate is not only educating yourself about like one thing or one DAO. It's about keeping yourself up to date about everything that's happening in crypto 24/7. So yeah, generally like follow crypto Twitter, listen to podcasts, be active in discords, talk to other delegates. In the same way, like in legacy systems where people would read newspapers in order to get up to date with what's happening. In Web3, there is no newspapers. There are newsletters, but they're insufficient. The media is spread everywhere. So another art is to sort of absorb all this information, process it, and identify the one that is important and relevant and retain it and use it in the future.
Thank you. That's a packed list of advice. And by the way, Jenga, I think you are the first person to explain sense making as used in decentralized governance in a way that is not putting me off, right? When I first came across the word sense making in decentralized governance, I thought it was off-putting, right? And anytime someone says it, it's like, yeah, I'm like, what do you mean? Like we are basically doing experiments, and a lot of the things that comes out of this, in a lot of ways, it doesn't even make sense, right? So how do you use sense making in like a very, very experimental field where, you know, we are now basically, you know, testing a lot of parameters and, you know, looking at what sticks, and most of the time 80% doesn't. So the way you are able to coin it as basically looking at signals, right, and then picking or surfacing the ones that, you know, keeps the one that is constant or keeps ringing or keeps, you know, highlighting within the community and, you know, iterating or working on that, I think makes sense for the definition of sense making.
It's good that the sense making makes sense.
yeah, my opinion still is not to even use the word sense making in decentralized governance, because we have so much experiments that we are yet to get to that portion where we say that, hey, we have finally made so much sense in this experimentation. All right. One thing I want to add to Jenga's advice is basically to the delegators, right? Jenga has said so much about how this whole thing resembles traditional governance, where you have parliamentarians being elected by their constituents to go represent them. One of the things that I've felt is people holding their delegates accountable. And so it's in order to encourage decision-making and participation in DAOs, delegators or people who delegate their tokens to delegate should make sure that they check on them. If not regularly, at least periodically check on them. Make sure that they are reporting and providing updates on what they are up to. Very, very important. There has been situations where delegates have pursued their own self-interest at the expense of people who have delegated tokens to them, or at the expense of the community in which they represent. So it is very, very important for people who delegate their tokens to delegates to follow up and make sure that they are providing updates on all of the things that they are doing, and make sure that you read those updates and make sure that it aligns with your values and why you delegated your token to them. So that is something that I wanted to add over there. Now, Jenga, let's pivot the conversation to the ordinary person, or let's say I want to get involved in decentralized governance. I've listened to this conversation and it has piqued my interest, and I want to finally get into decision making in decentralized organizations or Web3. Where do I start and what can I do?
Yeah, good questions. I would say first thing you should do is go to Bankless Academy and do some lessons on decentralized governance. There is one in Optimism and one in Bankless DAO. So just for you to get like a recap and some credentials on your abilities. Second is to choose one place. If you're a beginner, don't go to 15 different DAOs like we do and try to do governance everywhere. You will just get lost. Just pick one thing that you believe you have some expertise in, you have some interest in, that you can stick around for the long haul, even though there is no incentive or there is a bear market or whatever else. And then just dive into that community, understand what people are talking about, understand what the governance there is about, like what are people trying to make decisions on. And going back to the sense make, right? Like based on all this information inside one DAO, try to come up with your first proposal. It may not be perfect and it doesn't have to be. The important thing is for you to go through the experience of doing this whole thing and posting your ideas in front of the community. Once you have done this once, and if you enjoy this experience, great, then you can repeat it again and again and become an expert governor like ThinkDecade. But if you decide, hey, this is not for me, that's fine too. At least you know where your strengths and weaknesses are.
Jenga, thank you. Absolutely, right? And what I also want to add is that centralized governance or governance is for everyone. Although Jenga did state that if this is not for me, then no. If you are in Web3 and you are in a DAO or you have a crypto token, chances are there's governance power tied to that token, right? So if you don't want to be active or be in the day-to-day activity of governance, one of the things you can also do is delegate it to a delegate, right? And of course, I'm going to cite that DAO steward as one example. If you are holding like an OP token, Arbitrum, Safe DAO, you know, you can delegate. And I also think that for starters, you know, for those who are starting out, there are so many things to learn, right? So even when you are interested in this, one of the things you can do is, if you have the token, you can still delegate while you learn. So once you get to a point where you are conversant with the way things work and you feel like you have gained knowledge to a certain level where you can now actively engage in the conversation and also help facilitate some of the decision making, you can actually undelegate and then redelegate to yourself, right? So you can be an individual delegate participating in governance. So that is something that I also wanted to put out there. And another thing is also, you know, generally engaging in the conversation in the Discord and then the forums. I mentioned that a lot of this decision making in some of these governance or a lot of these DAOs starts from the grassroots level, and the grassroots level is where the community is at. Most of the DAOs are in Discord. So chances are you get in there, you would see that there's an entire channel dedicated to governance discussions. So it's a great place to get in and see the day-to-day conversations that are happening and the signals, right? The signals. So get active in the Discord. Also, you should have the token. A lot of these governance, you need or decision-making or final decision-making, you need the token of the protocol or the ecosystem that you want to participate in. So if it is Optimism, if you want to vote and make, you know, actual decisions, you need the OP token. So you get the OP token by either buying, or there are ways that you can actually contribute value to the Optimism collective and actually earn, right? And that includes, you could be creating content or educational stuff. You could be building protocols on there. You could be liquidity farming. And these are some of the ways that you can accumulate OP tokens and then use those tokens to participate in governance. So that is that. Jenga, last one before we move from here is that for an individual, why should I actually participate in, you know, these governance things? You know, the way we are talking, some people, it might sound like really complicated and very intertwined. So why should people, you know, take their time to participate?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this myself, like, why should people take the time to participate? The best answer I can come up with is because now you finally can. To give you a bit of context, in legacy systems, try to participate in governance outside of like that one vote you make every few years. It's so difficult. You need to have connections, you need to have wealth, you need to have like all these things in order to actively participate. But here is this new system where you don't have to reveal your identity. You can hold tokens and vote, but then also participate without having a network or without having too much wealth, and influence the way the protocol or the DAO moves. That is so powerful. It was never possible before in a few hundred years, at least in the past, since democratic systems have been around. So take utilize this opportunity to its fullest extent, because now it's finally available.
Yes, absolutely, I agree with you, Jenga. And the question that I want to ask you is that if you are given the opportunity to determine the future of Web3, would you?
Okay, so yeah, definitely. I would love to influence the direction of Web3. The reason why I would like to do it is generally what I see in Web3 or crypto is like 99% of projects are absolute scams. And this is the consequence of a permissionless system. If the scammers, we can also call them grifters or profit maxis or whatever other term you want, are the ones that will eventually take over and recreate the new paradigm, then this whole experiment that we are doing is of no use. However, I do believe that I have the right incentives and the right motivation to not replicate the failures of the past and not be driven purely by profit. So yeah, would love to make a big change in Web3 if I was given the opportunity.
So if your answer aligns with Jenga, then there's a call for you to participate in decentralized governance, because that is how the future of these systems we are building and these communities we are building is determined. One other reason why you should perhaps also participate in governance is also, you know, some of the ecosystem have incentives for people who participate in decision making and help steer the ecosystem forward. So for delegates, there are so many perks, if I should use that, there are so many perks for people who, you know, who participate. So that's that. Jenga, what excites you about the future of decentralized governance?
Oh, well, I would say that I would go back to where I started, right? We are speedrunning the history of human coordination. We started with direct democracy. We reached the limits of direct democracy. We then went to delegated governance, and we already know what are the limits of delegated governance from legacy systems. What I'm excited about is to find out what is the crypto native way of doing governance. In other words, let me give you a context. So when the internet was first launched, all these newspaper companies, they just took their materials and pasted them on their website. This is called skeuomorphic design. You take the original product and slap it on a new technology. And this is where we are when it comes to governance in Web3. We have taken that old template and slapped it on Web3. The real innovation in the internet was social media. This is non-skeuomorphic design. This design is inspired by the new tools and not by the old product. In the same way, I believe that there will be a future where the governance in Web3 will be inspired by the tools and not by legacy systems. And this is what I'm excited about.
That was a banger. I definitely agree with you there. And I'm also excited about how we coordinate, right? And how finally, wherever you are, whoever you are, you can finally get involved, right? And not just involved, but determining humanity's future. And so it's also exciting. All right, so we have come to the end of today's episode. Thank you for listening. And we hope that this episode has increased your knowledge in decentralized governance and also, you know, stirred the curiosity in you a bit to explore further. Jenga, any last words?
Hey, okay. Last words, yeah. Wag me. We're all going to make it.
Wag me, people. Wag me. Until next one, stay relentless.